Hello, folks. Welcome along to this week's show. Before we crack into it, I wanted to say a massive thank you to some wonderful responses that we got to last week's episode with Ian Bonnot and Peter Ettege talking about their fantastic documentary, Rising Phoenix. It seems that a lot of you were not aware of the documentary, and after watching it, absolutely inspired and blown away, not just by the stories of these incredible people within the film, but also the way that Ian and Peter have chosen to tell their stories. So thank you for that. It really means the world, and we'll pass on those comments as well to Ian and Peter. Our latest guest on Soundtracking is Melissa Parmenter. Now, not only has she worked alongside the great Michael Winterbottom, who's previously appeared on this show, for many years as a producer, but she's also a composer who scored The Killer Inside Me and Genova, as well as the Scandinavia EP and her new album, Miss Apica. Now, we'll discuss all of that in a moment, but first, a word from our friends at HelloFresh. Now, if you didn't know, HelloFresh provides all the fresh, seasonal ingredients and step-by-step recipe cards to cook up delicious dinners from scratch. And they're delivered straight to your door at a time that suits you. There's a huge range of recipes to choose from and options to suit every lifestyle and taste, including rapid recipes that are on the table in 20 minutes or less, vegetarian options, and treat yourself recipes for those special nights in, which we all seem to be having a lot of at the minute. All the ingredients you need for each recipe are included in the box, so there's no need to have to nip out to the shops to pick up something that you're missing. And there's also flexible delivery and subscription too. There's no waste either, with all the ingredients weighed, pre-portioned. In fact, HelloFresh customers waste 21% less food than those who buy from supermarkets. Well, listen, I can tell you that I'm bored of my own cooking after the last 7 months. So any excuse for some inspiration is absolutely welcome. And this offer from HelloFresh might have come at just the right time. And along with delicious recipes, you could also get 50% off your first HelloFresh box and then 35% off your next three after that. So just go to hellofresh.co.uk and use the promo code SOUND. That's hellofresh.co.uk with the promo code SOUND for your 50% off your first HelloFresh box and then 35% off your next three after that. Go on, you know you want it. And so to the multi-talented Melissa, producer, composer extraordinaire. And we'll begin with one of her cues from Genova, Alleyways. Thank you so much for sparing the time for us, Melissa.
Oh my goodness, thank you. So lovely to meet you, finally.
Yeah, we've talked about you in the podcast before, but your place and position in our world of watching, you know, films and music is quite unique in that you cross these two worlds very successfully on both sides of it, you know, as a producer and also as a composer. But from hearing you talk, from watching interviews and things with you, that world of music is so personal and kind of rooted in you, isn't it?
No, exactly. I mean, yeah, when you watch me talking, It's like, lovely. Where did that music come from?
So lovely.
There's one interview on me online and I look like a posh Tory MP. I was like, oh my God, that's so embarrassing.
Not at all. Well, the stuff that I've watched is kind of it just your pure passion, the way your face lights up when you talk about creating music is just lovely.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, everyone's got their inside monologue, their inside space. And that's where my space is inside. Because all the producing is all very sort of hands-on, practical, very much people out, you know, everything exterior. Of course, inside you've got your voice as well. So it's amazing to have that chance to do both, you know?
Yeah. I imagine that the composing music came first, but in a professional capacity, did the producing come first? Or how did that work?
Yeah, exactly. Well, funnily enough, our friend Matt Whitecross, he was the one. Because I actually met him years ago when we were together on the Oxford Channel. We were doing after university. I did music at university, but my entire childhood, I was just overexcited about everything, to be totally honest. I loved dancing. I was choreographing. I was composing music, playing piano. I did the violin. And so all that energy and enthusiasm for everything, it did come first, the music, I think. But at the same time, you're young, you're sort of experiencing the world. And I did this work with Matt in the Oxford Channel. That's where I sort of got into the excitement of production, and making films was like the ultimate. So Matt was actually working with Revolution Films and Michael Winterbottom at the time. And I came and like covered for him one day. And then the rest is history, as they say. I was there for like, I've been working for like 20 years with Michael, with Revolution, with Matt, with all of us. We've sort of worked, made so many films together. And I think, you know, when you study music and then you come out of university, it's like, where to start? Where do you start? So for me, I was like, well, if I work in film, maybe I can get my CD out. It's like, throw it to the editors.
Here's a great composer who should be.
Anyway, so that was kind of how it all came about.
But I imagine as well, though, that you know, being a producer, you know, producers involved in so many aspects behind the camera of the film and what we see as a finished article, and music's part of that. So even when you've not been composing for the films that you've worked on as a producer, you must have still had an influence in that, and a decision and a conversation in that as well.
Well, exactly. I mean, I was from the start, you know, to, like, music for me is where everything stems from, you know. But working with Michael, well, we started off with, like, we did 9 songs. That was all music. And I was determined I wanted to be in charge of the music. Like, that's my job. Then we're not going to get a music supervisor here. To be fair, Michael has incredible taste in music. And most of the time, it'll be a combination of him knowing exactly what he wants, or, you know, we research things together. And I really loved getting into the world of, you know, this sounds really exciting, music clearances and licensing, but choosing tracks, things that work for the picture, and then getting to know all the publishers and the labels. And that's what a producer does as well. You need to have, you know, you make all the contacts and so forth. But with the music, it was very much an organic process, but Michael was driving it quite a lot of the time. Because it is hard, isn't it? It's like when you have that voice inside, you know, Michael kind of just knew what he wanted. And then we all sort of pull around that.
Can you remember the point where you did kind of, you know, we joke about, here's a CD of a great composer that you should use sort of thing. And I'm assuming that he knew quite early on about that side of you, and about, you know, you make and you compose beautiful and brilliant emotive music. But what was that sort of turning point of it going, I'm not just going to, you know, kind of be the person that organises all this. What about using my music? Can you remember that point?
That point? Well, I think because I'd always composed music since I was very young, all piano, very much piano-based. And I had lots of tracks, which I was always working on, and had them, you know, in my little library. And it just felt very, very natural in the process of making the film. I was so involved in the actors, the shooting, and it emotionally engaged with the whole thing. It just made sense for me to approach and say, you know, but it's not like I was there saying, oh, please use my music.
Yeah.
It was very much an organic thing. And then even when we did Jennifer, we shot 6 weeks in Italy, Colin Firth, Catherine Keener, and it was so, so much fun. And there again, the sort of experience of being on set and working with everyone from the beginning to the end of making the film, I had these ideas, I had these musics. And then it came to the, you know, I was very lucky because it comes to, you know, we needed to do some temp music, you know. So it was like, okay. And I basically just suggested things, you know.
Yeah.
And sort of the strings were working. And funnily enough, it was like my first one. And I did it all on GarageBand, which is like... quite impressive.
Well done.
I know, anyone can do a film school. And it was so wonderful. It felt a very organic process, and it's quite unusual, I have to say. And it just I was so happy that I wasn't replaced. That was my first one. Your biggest fear is like, who's going to replace the temp school? If you get in there at the beginning and you are the temp music, then you've got a good chance that you will stay.
I mean, I guess that's a, you know, there are some composers who that would be the idea of heaven, of being on the production, being on set to sort of watch the performances and all that, and how that can feed the real kind of core of the emotion that the director's trying to get at. And there are other composers who, you know, they just need to read the script and that's kind of how they do it because it's their interpretation of things. But that just feels like such a wonderful way to really find rich textures and layers to what the music needs to do, really. Particularly, I was watching Genoa, and there's a track, Playing in the Snow, I think it's called, where when you watch it on screen, you know, it's two worlds for that cue. So you're outside in the snow with these kids and having a lovely kind of boisterous time in the snow, and then inside is much more considered, but this beautiful piece of score has to transcend both these places and stuff. And I don't know really what my question is about that, but that was kind of just it's a beautiful piece of score. It's got this kind of quite specific structure to it that I really love.
It's got a kind of Erik Satie style piano vibe going on, I think, for me, because in the story, the little girl, she played by Willa Holland, they both learn the piano, and so the piano was very much the center of the idea of the score. And obviously when we were shooting, like you say, it was the most incredible experience to have the atmosphere of shooting in the old town in Italy, and we've got the piano and the girls are learning the piano, and then I was playing the pieces that they then played on film, and choosing all of the all of the repertoire they were going to play as part of their lessons. And so there was that element of sort of simple piano, which obviously is my specialty. and it just felt all very natural. I think, you know, with Michael, he's very good. He places things, he gives really incredible sort of direction of where the music needs to go. And I think, well, that was The Wake, wasn't it? It's quite a sad scene. Thank you.
the music's not melancholy in a way. It's kind of got a real playfulness to it. It's clever. It's really,
yeah.
It's almost kind of, for me anyway, it's a kind of, you know, it's that weird thing about wakes, isn't it? Where it's a really sad time, but there's always that moment where it's celebratory of a kind of yeah. person or whatever. So there's almost that, you know, at some point it's going to be okay yeah. kind of thing. And that's, for me, almost what the music does in a way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, thank you. Yeah.
With score as well, because I want to get on and talk about your, you know, your own compositions outside the world of film and stuff, where it's purely the music. But just a couple of other specific score moments as well. And when you look at something like The Killer Inside Me, and when it's a genre kind of film in a way, does that come into how you start thinking about the score or what you're going
to
write?
In the case of Killer Inside Me, it was, we kind of wanted to do something that had a sort of a sense of that sort of it had some electronic elements to it, some sort of sound effects and that sort of, because it's such an intense story, it's quite full on. And I think I wanted to use the strings and all the tension strings in the sort of and combine those with sort of screechy metallic sounds, which I work with my friend Joel Cadbury, and we did that score together. I think on the case of that one, there was quite a lot of temp score that yeah. we put in that worked really well. I'm trying to remember. Was it? Oh my God, I can't remember the track.
But, it's 10 years ago. That's crazy.
I know. It's too long. I need to do another one. It was quite full on. There was a scene called Kill Joyce where he's basically it's a little bit too much, to be honest. But he's basically killing this Joyce. And it was intense violence. And it was really hard to write for that, to keep watching it and going little tiny details. But, you know, that sort of... I don't know. I wanted that whole score to have the piano still at the heart of it, but using sort of sound effects and more sort of electronic sounds and the tension strings to like to move it along. The inspiration behind that, I basically do just go with mainly with the story and the pictures of how they come to me at the time. I'm not very good at planning with music. It's very much
emotion, isn't it? At the time,
it really is. And actually, sometimes it was quite stressful because when you're writing scores, it's got to make the story work, you know, and you've got to tell this story. And it's so different to when you're writing just music for yourself. That I found, you know, sometimes it can be very stressful trying to, you know, tell the story in the right way. But that's the beauty of the job.
Who were the film composers that you kind of really admired, kind of, you know, when you were getting into that? And was it something, because you were so, you know, you were composing music from a really early age, were you aware of kind of that synergy and that relationship between film and music quite early on?
Yeah, I mean, I would literally go to see films just to listen to the score. That was a lot to do, yeah. But I have to say, whenever I think of the composers, it's always basically the ones that most people say. But anyway, what can you do? Like Michael Nyman, Philip Glass. Mm. And they were just, and Gabriel Yared, and you know, it's they're all men. They're all men. Jocelyn Pook. Love Jocelyn Pook's support. Yeah. Eyes Wide Shut. It's just one of those things that just hits you from the heart, and I think, you know, there was a time during when I was really young that I was literally buying soundtracks every week. Would be The Big Blue, you know.
Oh, I love The Big Blue.
Sally Potter had incredible soundtracks. Literally everything. Every week would be a new soundtrack. And then I feel like there was a period, unless it was me being very busy doing something else, there was a period in time, maybe for like around 15 years, where the soundtracks became more like just functional.
Yeah.
And I stopped buying some soundtracks. It sort of didn't interest me. But then recently there's been such a big research of scores and soundtracks. It's really, really exciting.
Totally. And I think that as well, what's really interesting, like I remember the use of well of existing music and score and how that works is really interesting. And I think that, like, I spoke to Luca Guadagnino for Call Me By Your Name, I loved the film, and I thought that the way that he'd used, you know, he used Philip Glass and things and that, and I just think that that was such an amazing, and it was all existing music, but in a slightly different way, you know, in terms of it not all being kind of needle drop popular music track, it being, you know, existing classical music as well, and John Adams, and
exactly, yeah,
that was really clever.
That was fantastic, and it was so wonderful because it just put, you can listen to that whole album through from the beginning to the end, and you're going through so many different styles.
Yeah.
And whoever it is watching, you know, you have the remnants of the film in your mind and in your heart when you're listening. Mm-hmm. So it reminds you about the film, but it also reminds you of your experiences in the song, like the whole heat of it. And then the music's so fantastic. I could not agree more. It's a really good example of like where they, you know, and Michael's actually very good at that, because we have a lot of Martha, a lot of Strauss that we put in the Trip series, which is sort of melancholy but huge. And yeah, so it is true that, it, you know, I think, oh, it's just so exciting.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
Yeah. Like going from Suffering Stevens to like Ryuichi Sakamoto, it's like, oh, that's like brilliant. Yes. Can I have that every day, please?
Exactly. And all the people who've never heard John Allen or haven't heard that music, suddenly they, you know, from, you know, they might just like Suffering, suddenly they love everything else. And it can really get people I think it's fantastic.
You mentioned the trip, and one of the things I wanted to ask, I love the trip. It's so great.
I love it too.
It's so brilliant. You know, when you were deciding on how that was going to sound music-wise, because like you say, it does have all this beautiful kind of really kind of grand orchestra music that comes in, but then you have these two occasionally, you know, bursting into song or doing an impersonation of Tom Jones singing or Sinatra singing or whatever and stuff. That must be a nightmare.
They are a nightmare. Actually, I have to call up all the labels and say, just so you know, Steve and Rob are going on the road again. So we've no idea what they're going to start singing next, but it will probably be very expensive. That's my producer hat on. I'm like, oh my goodness. They're so amazing. Like, I was watching it actually. It's a bit sad, isn't it, watching clips?
No, it's not. You should, because it's brilliant. And because we can't go anywhere at the minute as well. It's like, it's perfect viewing.
I know. I was looking at the ABBA, when they, on the first series of the trip, and, you know, the winner takes it all. And just the way they start, and then they keep correcting each other as they're singing, because they keep getting it slightly wrong. And it's so, well, honestly, Michael, really, I don't know how it happened, but we found two actors who both just secretly love singing. Well, actually, Rob maybe less secretly.
Yeah.
It's incredible live show, which is all singing. But Steve and Rob together, they are, I love it. I love it. They're hilarious and they really do sing so well.
But that, I think that's the thing, it's so relatable on so many levels, like that thing of getting lyrics wrong. You know, you kind of, you listen to a song and you make your own interpretation. You go, no, I heard it this way. And you know, that's the way. It's just all those little things are just another layer to why it's hilarious and absolutely brilliant. What inspires you've got this brilliant new record, and I've heard a couple of tracks from it, Estonian Misapika, is that how you say it?
Is that Chelya Misapika?
Yeah.
The album's called Misapika. There's a track called Chelya Misapika, and there's track, yeah, Osuni. Oh, great, thank you.
What inspires that side of your composing?
Well, I think for me it was it's like an antidote to real life and everything else that's going on, and obviously producing films is very stressful at times and involves a lot of talking, communicating, you know, and discussing and emailing, and there's so many practical things and also creative, but not in a kind of, you know, so it's quite, for me, it's my space where I go, where I don't have to talk to anyone. And I just write my music, my tunes. And it's so wonderful just to be lucky enough to just be free to do the pieces I wanted to do and then put it together as an album. And then obviously with the whole digital, the way that you can release music nowadays, I'm absolutely thrilled to be able to do this. And I want to do another one after, but anyway. But this one was Misapika. Yeah, it's just basically, I had these sound effects that I recorded during filming of Geneva, actually, a long time ago. and whenever I was in Italy, I'd be like, recording all the sounds that just remind me of the heat in the summer. So you've got the bells, the church bells, and Italian church bells, but slightly different to to other bells for some bizarre reason. Anyway, so I was recording all these amazing sounds from Italy that I wanted to feature into the album. And for me, it's just basically one big, because I was born in Italy and I grew up there. So it's one big nostalgia trip, this album, for me to Italy. And Ostuni is a town just in Puglia, on the heel of Italy, down south. And actually, there's a really nice video of it that Michael put together for me, a video, music video for Ostuni, with archive footage for like 1950, 1960. And it's all black and white, stunning archive footage, which basically, like, it looks like 1920s. They're really, really backward in the 1960s, and it's changed so much now. Yeah, nice video too. And it's just all from the heart, really. This, it's all from inside me.
And there's some beautiful, the kind of cellist on it, Harry Escott, who I've always loved the sound of the cello, but it's something I think in the last, I think, do you know what I think it is? I think it's since Hilda's Joker score and speaking to her about that, and then it, and kind of almost deep diving into her world a bit more of that, of hearing how she composes on the cello. I don't know, it's just an instrument that really resonates with me. How does it work with that when it's kind of piano and cello?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with you on the cello. Sorry, I had to say that. Oh my goodness, I could not agree more. There is the warmth, the sort of, it's so strong. And when we wrote it, basically the piano always comes first for me. But there were some tracks, like for example, there's a track called Cistanino on there, another town in Puglia. And I wanted to use Harry's cello almost like a sort of an Indian, a sitar, like a sort of a Middle Eastern instrument, but use the Western instrument as that. So, and then the sounds that Harry got from the cello playing that piece were just phenomenal. And it's just a very versatile instrument. And so I basically take in my piece that I wrote for the cello, and I go to Harry's studio, and then we have a play around, and we've performed quite a lot together as well. Harry's amazing. I mean, he wrote the score for The Wedding Guest, and I've known him from years back when we did The Road to Guantanamo. He did the score for that as well.
Yeah.
So he's very much in our life, and I love the cello. I'm like you.
Thank you.
with your connection with Italy, was Italian cinema a big thing for you, or was it kind of,
you know, Yeah, I mean, I watched all the usual, the old classics, La Dolce Vita and so forth. When I was growing up, I was more into French films, actually. It was a sort of three colours film, and Girl on the Bridge, La Fille sur le Pont, which I watched recently in lockdown. It's funny the things you do in lockdown. You just sort of, if you have a moment, you watch things from years ago. Italy was really more personal experience of being there and loving it and feeling Italian wherever I go. And then when I'm in Italy, I feel very English. So I'm neither English nor Italian.
But that's the thing, though, is you can, you know, that's where our imagination comes in. And, you know, when you're there, you can be kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's the great thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember going to New York with my mum to New York for her 50th, and she'd always wanted to go. We went for like 3 nights, and we went out to the Statue of Liberty, and they had like a little coffee stand. And she's like, I was like, you go and get coffees and I'll go and get the headsets for the audio tour and stuff so we can do the whole thing. And I got them really quick. And so I got back as she was ordering in an American accent. I was like, oh, hello. She's like, bless her. Oh,
So sweet.
What's next? Have you found, you know, has lockdown, because it's been interesting speaking to people over the last however many months we've been in lockdown, you know, whether they found a kind of, you know, finding a creative time, and it's interesting the kind of waves people go through. Has it been a creative time for you? Have you been able to compose, and have you been producing as well? What have you been, you know, filling your time with, as well as watching great French cinema?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and a lot of children's Black Books. Yeah. We watched about 500 times. I was like, what can we find? Because basically I've got a son who's 9. And so to be honest, with children, I was so envious of people who didn't have children for lockdown. Just basically, I was like, oh, I could have 3 albums done by this time. And instead I got like, you know, an hour here or there. And watched a lot of Black Books. But yeah, Outnumbers is another one that's good. It's got to find the programs you can watch adults and children.
Yeah.
Together. But for lockdown, I did do some new pieces, actually. So that's exciting. The thing I find hardest for new albums and music is what the concept is. Because with instrumental music, it's not like you've got something you're saying with words.
There's no agenda there. There's no kind of, it's a film about this. But, you know, so there's, it's kind of a, it's a blank canvas, isn't it?
No, exactly. So I was like, oh, the months of the year. January, February, March, April. That's 12 tracks. Done. Album. And I was like, oh, God. And then I was, oh, maybe that is a good idea. Oh, anyway, that's the inside of my workings. The main thing is I did get a few tracks done. And then we're also talking about doing a film, a TV series, sorry, with Fremantle. And that's sort of the Boris Johnson COVID story, which Michael is writing.
Oh, wow.
I know. I was like, oh, goodness me. We just did Greed with Steve Coogan. A version of Philip Green. So we've gone from Philip Green to Boris Johnson.
Well, he's just been in Puglia, is he not? So it's kind of like you got that.
I was like, oh no, another man behaving badly.
God, yeah, jeez.
No, it's such an incredible story, really. I mean, the poor chap getting COVID and everything. So we're working on that. And then I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? We don't really know when filming, I mean, people have started filming and things are getting busy, but whether there's another lockdown now, I can't. Mm. I was like getting a bit depressed about that this morning.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask about as well, because the first thing that you kind of released of your own, the Scandinavia EP back in.
Yes, exactly.
Did you listen back to that? And how would you say your own music has changed or developed or grown since then? Do you feel or notice a difference at all?
Yeah, I think I do, and especially with my new lockdown tracks, we're feeling very different.
I actually have one for every month that we've been in lockdown.
Exactly. I've definitely got 3 in the bag. I'm missing a few, but the EP, actually, funnily enough, they do have the same sound and texture, because I recorded them on the same piano, and Harry was playing on the EP, and he is on the album. But I felt like I had unfinished business. I only did 5 tracks for the EP, so I needed to do more in that vein. And I felt that I had a lot to say, and I'm really enjoying releasing the music like as an artist, sort of my own thing. And I do feel It has. It's funny. You find new ways of playing the piano every time, and it is really interesting to see how things change. But it's never sort of worse or better. It changes. I think the main thing when you're playing solo piano is you have to really have a melody, I think, or some tune, something that's beautiful, that's saying something, because otherwise you can feel, you don't want it just to sound like an accompaniment to something else. It needs to speak on its own, because if you are going to do that very simple piano music with little else going on, it needs to really say something. That's always my mission. I've got to keep saying things.
Yeah, well, I mean, this the tracks that I've heard from the album, it's so beautiful. Ostuni particularly just kind of stopped me in my tracks. It's kind of, yeah, it's absolutely stunning. It's brilliant.
Well, definitely watch the video.
Yeah, I will. I'm going to go and watch it. One quick thing before I wanted to ask, just with regards to like Michael and this kind of, you know, brilliant career that he's had as a storyteller, and whether you notice a difference from the when you started working with him to now in terms of music, if you're going to get clearance on a music, if you go now, it's a Michael Winterbottom film, they'll go, oh yeah, fine.
Well, not really. What I'd say hasn't changed, which is funny, is that Michael does often go back to the same music. So like The Trip is all the Michael Nyman from Wonderland, which is his own film. So he'd steal from his own film and put it in the other, which looks a little bit lazy. I'm like, do you not want to try some new tracks? But
we got clearance for this one, we can get it again.
Yeah, exactly. But like in The Killer Inside Me, we had some Marla and they had the same in another one. So we've kind of got our little address book of where we need to go, which tracks where and when. But to be honest, actually, the music, the cost of clearing music nowadays has gone crazy. It's because of the streaming, everything's gone bananas, because you need to clear everything for worldwide, all media, in perpetuity, forever. And that doesn't really exist anymore because of the streaming world, so it changed everything. So I've definitely seen the prices go up. But normally we are really lucky and people love working with us, and Michael's films are always seen as a good thing to do.
Yeah, totally. It's so lovely to get the chance to chat to you. It really is.
Oh, thank you so much. I really, really loved meeting you finally.
Yeah, you too. I hope we get to do it in person at some point as well.
I know. Yeah. One day. We're allowed out outside the house.
Exactly. And listen, take care. Keep writing. Get the rest of that other album finished.
Oh God, yeah. I need to, if they've got any other ideas apart from the months, let me know. Do The Colours of the Rainbow.
Yes. Zodiac signs.
I know, I thought of that. Tricky. Anyway.
Seven Dwarfs. It could be a lot of sort of EP stroke and between an EP and an album.
Minimum 8 tracks for an album.
And Snow White. There you go. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Exactly. Nailed it.
Melissa, take care. Thank you so much. Lots of love. Bye. Melissa's new album, Misapica, that is Loco Rontondo, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrack and with the wonderful composer and producer. My huge thanks to Melissa for taking the time to talk to us. Misapica is available to pre-order now, with 3 of the tracks currently available, all of which we played extracts of during the conversation. head to edithbowman.com to find a link to a Spotify playlist for this show. My website is also the place to catch up with all of our previous episodes, including my chats with Michael Winterbottom and Luca Guadagnino. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And also, please, if you can, do subscribe to our little YouTube channel as well, where I'm putting together a little show featuring guests on the podcast and others who don't quite fit the screen music brief. It has been wonderful to put together, and I would hugely appreciate you going and checking it out. Next up, well, the man who started all this for us, in fact, was our very first guest on episode one. Since then, he's been back two more times, and this is his fourth, the return of the wonderful Ben Wheatley, talking about his adaptation of Rebecca and Clint Mansell's fabulous score for it. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then. In the meantime, stay safe.